Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
David Cobb is a college basketball and college football writer at CBS Sports, also role player here at 92.9 FM ESPN. Thursday with Jeffrey Wright and company, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show. David, how's it going? Happy Monday.
Hey, happy Monday to you. We got a couple of NFL football games on tap. We're here, man. It's like we're in the thick of it, finally, football.
Yeah, and week two of the college football season, even though there wasn't like those premier matchups besides Michigan and Oklahoma, which I don't even think really lived up to what it was tabbed to be. John Mateer was great. Bryce Underwood, not so much. But it delivered in the fact that we had two pretty major upsets, and I want to start with the first one that really comes to mind in South Florida. South Florida goes into the swamp and beats Florida 18-16. Now, what has followed is kind of funny. Connor and I are going to talk about it later. We've already discussed it a little bit, but we have a vote of confidence from Scott Strickland in week two. That's a really early vote of confidence into Billy Napier. But what did you make of that game in regards to sort of South Florida's viability as a college football playoff contender out of the group of six?
Well, it's funny, isn't it? Because it's awesome what South Florida has done. 2-0, getting ranked, probably should be ranked higher. Got another chance to go and do it at Miami. But at the end of the day, like, they still have to go and win the American if they're going to make the playoff. Like, that's still the only path. I mean, I guess it's feasible they could get in as an at-large if they were, 11-1 or undefeated and then lost in the AAC title game. But, like, it's not a given. It's still a, 10 or 11 teams fighting for one spot. And so, that's the goal, and they've shown they're capable of it. But, I mean, heck, UTSA is 0-2 right now, but they haven't played a game in the American yet. So, if they get it together and end up being better than they've shown so far, like, they're not out of it. And so, like, I just think it's worth cautioning the whole G5 universe that, like, yeah, South Florida has been the best G5 team for 2 weeks, but what you probably have to win your league, and there's still a lot of football left. So, huge result though for that program, because they've been kind of knocking on the door, and like, we were waiting for them to be good, and everybody thought Alex Golesh would get them going. And now they finally broken through, and to do it in the swamp against the in-state opponent, that just makes it all the sweeter.
Yeah, now you brought up the AP Top 25. They came in at number 18. You said they probably should be ranked higher. But the AP, I'm not surprised by it, because they do this with group of six teams, even when they have a good resume through a few weeks. It just happens this way. But it was kind of it's a little patronizing, isn't it? It's more of like a, you should be happy to be here, and not looking at their resume and saying, well, you beat the number 25 team in the country, you beat the number 13 team in the country. And I asked this question, if their helmet said Alabama, if it had the A on it, probably top five at the very minimum from having those two wins. Like, that's what's frustrating about it. It's not surprising, it's frustrating.
Oh, and I agree. You go look at the list of AP voters from this week, and it's a hard job, man. I had to vote. I had the privilege of voting in the AP poll earlier in my career, and it's more difficult than you might think to just rank 25 teams, especially when you're a beat writer who's been paying attention to your own team all day, and then it's 2 a.m. on Sunday morning, you just got home, and now you got to go pay attention to the rest of college football. Like, it's a hard job, but it's inexcusable, the fact that some voters out here – still have Florida in their top 15. What are we doing? I mean, you lost at home to South Florida. Your only victory is against Long Island University. So, yeah, man, are we ranking the helmets and the logos and the histories, or are we ranking what you've done on the field? Because if we're ranking what you've done on the field, South Florida's resume is as good as any resume in college football right now with wins over Boise State and Florida. And, you know, it's nice that they cracked the top 20, but, you know, when I cast my ballot for our CBS Sports 136 this week, you know, I had them quite a bit higher.
Where'd you have them, can I ask?
Yeah, I'm pulling it up so I can tell you the truth on this.
Okay, all right.
But, yeah, no, let's see. South Florida, I have them at 11 in this week's poll.
Yeah, but I figured top 15 at the very least. Basically everybody in front of them not named Florida State has, and obviously Ohio State with the win over Texas, has a worse resume. It's just the truth of it. And I know it's early in the season, and you don't want to put a group team in the top 10 or anything like that, but I figured top 15 at the very least.
Yeah,
right?
So for me, I mean, the only teams I have – so every team that I have ranked above South Florida also has at least one really good win. The only three that don't are Georgia, Penn State, and Oregon, because I have belief in them, and I think they'll get there, right? But no, I mean, every other team that I have ranked ahead of South Florida, I have – you know, has beaten a quality Power Four type of opponent. And South Florida has obviously beaten Boise and Florida. I mean, we'll see how good both those teams end up being. But, you know, I mean, I think I feel confident in where I have them. I have them ahead of Illinois. I mean, Illinois went on the road and beat Duke. I have them ahead of Georgia Tech, and Georgia Tech in week one went and beat Colorado. I have them ahead of Mississippi State, who just beat Arizona State. And I doubt a whole lot of people have Mississippi State in the top 15. You know, I've got them 14. And, I mean, do I believe – is this a projection when you're voting? Is it a projection of what you think it'll look like at the end of the season? Or are you actually evaluating what's transpired? I think it should be an evaluation of what has transpired. But obviously other people take it with a different approach, and they try to project out. And well, I don't think Mississippi State's going to be good at the end of the season. So, you know, I'm not going to respect what they just did. Man, they just went out and beat Arizona State, right, the preseason favorite to win the Big 12. So I think you have to respect that.
Yeah, and that's where I want to go with this next question. Mississippi State handles business 24-20. It was electric in Starkville on Saturday, but they beat the number 12 team in the country. I don't know what Kenny Dillingham and his defensive coordinator had dialed up on that final play. Not having safety help on Brennan Thompson, who's known as one of the fastest players in college football, regardless of what he's done production-wise up to this point, you know, at Oklahoma. He is very, very fast. Not to have safety help and to sort of have him in a one-on-one situation on a deep route, absolutely insane. But I did ask this question as well. Do you think this – did this tell you more about Mississippi State taking a step under Jeff Lebby, or did it tell you more about the Big 12 and the parity and maybe we crowned Arizona State when we shouldn't have, even after losing Cam Scataboo?
Well, I think it's both. I think it's a tremendously consequential outcome for both teams because – it really levels and resets the expectations around Arizona State, and it's a bad loss for the Big 12 as a whole, and the Big 12 did not have a great week two. But it doesn't actually doom Arizona State. I mean, they could very easily go into the league and still work their way into the Big 12 championship game and ultimately win it and be back in the playoff. Like, that's actually not off the table. Because, look, I mean, they were not great against Mississippi State last season when Mississippi State was turbo bad, and yet they still ended up winning the Big 12 and making the college football playoff. You know, who's to say they can't go and do that again? Now, I mean, I think the issue is Sam Levitt's got to play a lot better if that's going to happen. They don't have the Cam Scataboo security blanket that they had last season. But my gosh, that receiver, Jordan Tyson, right? I was blanking on his name, but he is really good for Arizona State and was a lot to handle for Mississippi State. And I mean, really, Arizona State dominated the second half of that game. But in the end, even though it wasn't pretty and even though it looked quite dire there, Mississippi State found a way, and they had to. I mean, I think that's a program-defining, trajectory-altering sort of outcome for the Bulldogs, because now all of a sudden you have that marquee victory to hang your hat on. You have some momentum now under Jeff Lebby in year two, and you've got the confidence to know, like, yeah, we can go out and hang with some of the big dogs that are left on this schedule.
Yeah, now worth mentioning in the SEC. I know that the Texas loss to Ohio State is the loudest one, and obviously Alabama losing to Florida State in week one, very loud as well. But the SEC's done really good in the non-conference against Power Four opponents. They're 8-2, and that's in first by a fair amount. What do you think about the SEC and their performance so far, even though those two losses were pretty loud?
Well, this is week three is huge for the SEC. I mean, you got big time conference matchups. You got Alabama playing Wisconsin. You got Texas A&M
Notre Dame.
Huge. I mean, this is SEC is front and center in week three. So we'll really know more this week. I mean, that Tennessee Georgia game, we don't know anything about either of those teams. I'll be honest. Like, yeah, oh wow, Tennessee put up 700 yards against who? ETSU, all right? Like, that Syracuse team that Tennessee beat in week one, they almost lost at home to UConn, and their coach had them running wind sprints.
Which, Fran, so, I love you, but don't do that. That's embarrassing.
It was something. It was something. And then, you know, Georgia, they looked like garbage against Austin Peay. I mean, all the credit in the world to the Govs who beat Middle Tennessee in week one, but, I mean, come on, all right? They were just sleepwalking through that game. So we don't know anything about either of those teams yet. We're going to learn a lot about both. We're going to learn a lot about Ole Miss, and we're going to learn about a lot about Arkansas when they play each other. And then wouldn't it be hilarious, Gabe, if LSU lost to Florida the week after Florida lost to South Florida? You know, so this thing could take a lot of different directions in week three for the SEC. But, you know, so far they've passed the test. They haven't aced it, but,
right,
but they've passed the test and look like, you know, they look like the real deal. They look like a conference that's going to be as good or better maybe than the Big Ten.
And it kind of feels like still, even with all that said, and them passing the non-conference Power Four tests more often than not, they're 8-2 in those games, still feels like the SEC is going to finish in a similar position than that they were in last year, where you had a bunch of teams right there on the outside looking in with three losses. Feels like there's just more cannibalism than ever. Now we'll see how that looks, if Georgia can separate themselves, if Texas can separate themselves. LSU is another one we'll look at. But it just kind of feels like it'll end that way again this year. Do you feel that same way?
Well, if you're looking for a dominant team in the SEC, that team has not emerged. That team has not shown itself. Texas, I didn't think was great, even in a convincing win over San Jose State. That offense still has a lot to work through. I'm curious to see what comes of this Arch Manning shoulder situation, which Steve Sarkisian just completely downplayed.
Yeah, I don't like his excuse too. We don't have cameras on you when you're on the toilet, so I don't know what faces you're making. I don't know if that's a good example, Sark, but whatever.
I applaud his comeback. That was good humor. It didn't exactly convince me that Arch Manning is 100% healthy, because he just doesn't look comfortable throwing the football. And I give a shout out to Jeffrey Wright, who brought that up in week one, you know, and now everybody is kind of caught on to it now. But so I don't think Texas looks dominant. Georgia has not looked dominant. Alabama, obviously, with the week one loss to Florida State. LSU even, man, they were awful on Saturday against Louisiana Tech, and Brian Kelly was ripping his team a new one after that game. And so it's I don't know, like, who is that team? Is it going to be another collection of five or six really good teams with, you know, two, three losses near the top? Yeah, it absolutely could be. And in which case, you know, the advantage would then go to the Big Ten, because the Big Ten, you know, is probably going to have Ohio State, Oregon and Penn State all piled up there with, 12-0, 11-1, 10-2, something in that range. So, the Big Ten probably still better at the top. The SEC probably still deeper, kind of through the middle.
Yep. Speaking of which, Oregon, 69-3 over Oklahoma State. Dante Moore, he's looking the part so far, isn't he? I have to bring this up every week when I talk to you.
I know, Gabe. To answer your next question, yes, he will be on the rise in the quarterback power.
But I need to know. I need to know how high. Also, but I think the other part of that 69-3 thing is, this the last year for Mike Gundy at Oklahoma State? It's been a good ride, not so much anymore.
It kind of feels like the old guard is on its way out throughout college football. I mean, I was in Lexington on Saturday, and it kind of felt like the beginning of a funeral for Mark Stoops. And then you got, Oklahoma State just laying over, rolling over and playing dead at Oregon in a very embarrassing way. I mean, they've lost 10 straight games now against FBS opponents, which is just unfathomable. You look at Iowa and Kirk Ferentz and that continued inability of their offense, flopping in a rivalry game against Iowa State. I mean, you got the three longest tenured coaches in college football right there. And I guess Kyle Whittingham is in that conversation at Utah and they look pretty good, but yeah, it really does feel like with Oklahoma State in particular, there is no way out of this. I don't know that Mike Gundy can say anything or do anything at this point to get that thing turned around. It just feels like it's time for a fresh set of eyes on that program. And it's, you know, that was just embarrassing. I mean, Oregon scored, I think, on what, like 10 straight possessions. Yeah. And I mean, Oklahoma State had no offense whatsoever. It was embarrassing. If I'm an Oklahoma State fan, I'm about ready to be done right now with Mike Gundy.
Yeah, and you brought up Mark Stoops. You were in the house at Kroger Field against Ole Miss. Did you get any explanation after the game why he kicked a field goal on 1st and 10?
Well, okay. So my I don't think it was to enrage the people who
That's
had
what it felt like. Felt like shade. Felt like shade. 8.5. Yeah, why you gotta do that to the betters?
Well, it was actually decently savvy clock management because he's thinking, okay, if I kick a field goal now, we have time to do the onside kick,
and it was 8 seconds.
Yeah, okay. We fall on the onside kick. We got time to do a Hail Mary. So doing it that way raised their winning percentage from 0% to 0.1%. So, okay. I mean, I think it was smart.
I mean, he's from the state of Iowa, right? I think that's where he got to start in coaching. It kind of feels Iowa Hawkeyes esque, but whatever. It is what it is. Before you came on, and this is what I want to conversate with you to end this conversation. Before you came on, I talked about Clemson, right? And they looked out of sorts week one against LSU, lose that game. They follow that up with not a resounding win at all. They were down 16-3 at halftime against Troy, who the Tigers, Memphis Tigers, will play coming up this weekend. But one of the things that sticks out to me is the irony of it all, right? The past 5 years, we have written the obituary for Dabo Sweeney's Clemson teams. They'll never be like they once were. The two national championships are behind them. He doesn't go into the portal, not recruiting the same, probably not raising the same amount of money as other people around the country. You know, we talked about how they don't have the same type of talent on the outside in their skill positions. Defense isn't the same. O-line isn't the same. So we've been doing that for the past 5 years. And what has happened with that program? They've won the ACC more than once. They've been in the college football playoff. They've won 10 or 11 games just about every season besides the 1 year that they won 9. And I think it was Tyler from Spartanburg got on Dabo Sweeney's case. But they have survived. This year, we come into the year with a completely different outlook on Clemson. Experienced quarterback, better skill position players in Antonio Williams and Wesco than they've had in years. Offensive line looks decent. Defensive line has three players that should be drafted in the first 2 days of the NFL draft in 2026. So they were ranked top five, and I think most people said, okay, this is a real national championship contender. And they don't look the part at all now. So it's like it's completely flip expectation versus what we're seeing on the field.
Yeah, it has. My perception of Clemson has changed dramatically over the first 2 weeks of the season, because I was drinking the Kool-Aid for the reasons that you mentioned. Both sides of the football looked really solid coming into this season. It felt like Cade Klubnik and Garrett Riley, the offensive coordinator, were finally on the same page with the way they had closed last season, and that this was going to be a vintage Clemson team. He was going to have as good a numbers as any quarterback that's come through there under Dabo, and that they were going to just kind of sleepwalk their way into the college football playoff. Well, now all of a sudden you're 1-1. You're headed to Georgia Tech. You're less than a touchdown favorite for that game. And it just, they're not a national title contender, but here's the deal. They could still be the ACC champions. They could still win 10 or 11 games, and we're still going to get that same Dabo Sweeney sermon at the end of the season.
Sure,
about,
yeah.
Well, you guys should be grateful for how steady right. This program is and all that. And, you know, but that's not what we were. That's not what this team was advertised to be. We were not advertised another 10-3 team that either backs into the college football playoff or goes to play in the, you know, whatever, some New Year's Six Bowl. Like, we were sold a bill of goods about how this team could go out and win the national title. And I think that's off the table. I don't see any way that happens at this point.
It's not even just sold. Like, I truly bought it. And now I look at the ACC that they were supposed to win comfortably, right? Is that fair to say they were supposed to win comfortably? And I see Florida State looking revitalized, looking like more like 2 years ago than last year. And then I see Miami as a legitimate team on both sides of the football. I mean, it's not open and shut at all. In fact, I think it's an uphill climb for them to win the ACC based on what I've seen from other teams at the top of that conference.
Yeah, I mean, those three, I mean, it's going to be one of them. And two of those three will likely play in the ACC championship game. I mean, which of the two it'll be, I wouldn't write Clemson out, you know, of that conversation yet. But that's not what this was supposed to be. This wasn't supposed to be a, hey, we made the ACC championship, or hey, we won the ACC championship game, and then we get cooked by an SEC team in the college football playoff. But that's what this looks like. Now, I will say, I mean, we're going to learn a lot about Miami still over these next couple of weeks. Particularly, I mean, this week they play South Florida. The week after that, they play Florida. And they play Florida State. So, like, you know, Miami is kind of going to let us know over these next few weeks how good they are, how legitimate they are. And for that matter, like, how legitimate was their win over Notre Dame? Like, Notre Dame's about to host Texas A&M, you know, so we're going to figure out if we should really respect that result as much as you might think. So, you know, Miami looks good. Florida State looks good. I would need to see more from those two before I say, oh yeah, like they're head and shoulders better than Clemson. But I think it actually benefits the ACC a lot. I mean, the ACC relative, I would say, to the Big 12 has had a much better start to this season because you did have the Miami win over Notre Dame. You did have Florida State beating Alabama. And those results have legitimized that conference. Yep. And, you know, they're going to give the league a little bit more juice than it's had the last few years when it's like, all right, really, Clemson's still your best team. I mean, you know, so on the whole, like, it's actually been a decent start for the conference, even with Clemson kind of limping out of the gate.
Yep, for sure. Well, David, we'll talk again on Wednesday. I appreciate it.
Okay, sounds good.
Yes, sir. David Cobb is his name. He writes about college basketball and college football for CBS Sports, also a role player here at 92.9 FM ESPN. Thursdays, Jeffrey Wright and Company, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, right here on The Gabe Kuhn Show on X, David W. Cobb. Connor, big news. Big news. I just got a text. Received a text from my wife. And it reads, we have a crawler. Myers is on his hands and knees, all fours, crawling at home, and I'm missing it. I'm missing it while on the air. That's tough. That's a tough scene. My 9-month-old is mobile. Although that is probably, for most parents, they'll tell me that's a hell in itself. You know what I mean? Once they start getting mobile like that at that age.
Gabe, what's more important, seeing your child crawl for the first time or making fun of Florida?
Fair point. Fair point.
Thank you.
I have to get my jokes off about Billy Napier and Florida fans.
Case closed.
All right. We're going to continue hour number two when we return with a trip around the National Football League, and we have a lot to get to, including the capper tonight. We have
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland you know, think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Vikings and Bears on Monday Night Football. Stick around for that. When you take a visit to your local liquor store, I know what you tried to do, right? What you're going to do is you're going to show up and you're going to buy the bottle you've always bought. It's usually a national brand, well-known label, all of that. But stop doing it, please. For the sake of Memphis, for the sake of me, stop doing it. And instead, when you show up to your liquor store, buy a bottle of Old Dominic. It's the distillery in town that does it better. They just simply do it better. And they have an option for you at Old Dominic. They have gin, vodka, toddy, whiskey, bourbon, award-winning selections of that whiskey and bourbon. They have a new premium vodka if you're a vodka drinker. Make sure you go pick up a bottle today. Pairs very well with football season. Any bottle that they have. And as we get into the colder weather months, toddy is going to be at the top of your to-do list. You're going to have to pick that up. It's phenomenal. It's great. It's their oldest. It's their longest-standing spirit that they have at the distillery. And also, on top of just buying a bottle of Old Dominic, you need to visit Old Dominic. It's a one-of-a-kind, beautiful, state-of-the-art distillery, and it's here in Memphis, right on the riverfront. 305 South Front Street is where you can find them. You'll see the distillation process if you join them for a tour and tasting. You can book that at olddominic.com. They have events all the time. They have watch parties throughout the football season for the team of your choice. Make sure you see when they're going to be hosting those. olddominic.com. They have trivia. They have music on Fridays and Saturdays. Go to olddominic.com to check that out. Also, remember, at that site, you can ship Old Dominic spirits anywhere in the United States of America. You can get them as a gift. You have a lot of extended family members that don't get to drink Old Dominic all the time, even though they like it. So go to olddominic.com and ship it. And final thing, go to that site if you need an event space, a luncheon, an awards dinner, a rehearsal dinner for a wedding reception. Go to olddominic.com, fill out their questionnaire, and they will handle that for you. And I think I can tell you, just like Connor can tell you, I've been there on multiple occasions for a rehearsal dinner and a wedding reception. It is a beautiful space, and you're going to absolutely love it. Old Dominic Distillery, come say hi. All right, now we need to take a trip around the National Football League for week one. Connor, let's go ahead and get into it. All right, so San Francisco 49ers, they won. They won. They beat the Seattle Seahawks. I was on the wrong side of that, even though it was a close game. Had the Seahawks plus 1.5. They lost by 4, but that's beyond the point. Couple of things. One, they signed their right tackle, Colton McKivitz, to an extension. 3 years, $45 million, $27 million guaranteed. They also made a signing, and this will make more sense in a second. They bring back Kendrick Bourne. Kendrick Bourne at wide receiver. 1 year, $5 million. Now, why did they bring back Kendrick Bourne? I know that their pass-catching situation has been miserable. Brandon Ayuk not coming back till week 6. Juwan Jennings was amid the contract negotiations. Ricky Pearsall is just a young guy, even though he played really well against the Seahawks. But it's taken an even worse turn for the worst. George Kittle went down in the game against the Seahawks with a hamstring injury. And Juwan Jennings went down in the same game with a shoulder injury. Both guys are receiving MRIs today to figure out what happened. Luckily, Ricky Pearsall looked good. Maybe Kendrick Bourne can give them something. And I thought Brock Purdy, even with everything that happened, played very well. Very, very well. But they have the injury bug, and it ain't going away anytime soon. Bill Belichick, we talked about it on Friday, but he drew a line in the sand. He said, I'm no longer going to allow Patriots personnel to come into the North Carolina facility now that he's the coach at North Carolina. And he was asked about it after his game against Charlotte. They got the win. And he said, well, I'm not allowed to go there. I'm not allowed in their facility. So it makes sense. They're not allowed in my facility. Well, Mike Vrabel, the new head coach and former player for Bill Belichick, but he is the new head coach with the New England Patriots, he responded. He said, Bill came back for, to the best of my knowledge, Tom Brady's ceremony, referencing Belichick's appearance at Tom Brady's in-stadium Team Hall of Fame ceremony in June of 2024. And he went on to say, so I guess he's welcome back based on the fact that he was there. Also, if you paid attention to the news last week, owner Robert Kraft said he's going to erect a statue for Bill Belichick. I don't know why Bill Belichick has this beef with the Patriots. I don't. You got fired or let go, stepped down for cause, brother. Your team was bad, and you made horrible decisions after Tom Brady left. Mac Jones, bust at quarterback, didn't work out. Although it worked out for that rookie year, even though you got killed, just drugged by the Bills in that wild card game. But then after that, you draft Cole Strange in the first round. He's no longer with the team. You hired Matt Patricia to be your OC. You lost your luster. And you're no longer the coach because of that. I thought they treated you fairly the entire time. I don't know why he has this pettiness in his heart at age 73. It's too much. The Giants lost their season opener to the Washington Commanders. And by the way, the Commanders picked up right where they left off. Look really good. I don't think the sophomore slump that Jaden Daniels was being predicted to have is going to happen. But the Giants haven't scored a touchdown in the last three season openers. They're the first team to do this since the Lions. Not surprising to hear the Lions, but do you know when that happened? 1942 was the last time a team has not scored a touchdown in three back-to-back-to-back season openers. Russell Wilson, 17 for 37 for 168. Brian Daboll was asked about after the game about his status as the starting quarterback heading into week two. He says he's going to stick with him, although if you listen to his actual response after the game, don't listen to what he's saying. You have to listen to what he's not saying. He never really said, I'm going to stick by Russell Wilson as the season goes along. So we'll see how that plays out. But New York Giants off to a rough, rough start. It's more of a shout out than anything. Matthew Stafford set an NFL record Sunday for the most career opening day starts for a quarterback with 17. I don't think he's going to have much more than that, but he set the record. I guess he can retire a happy man now. 14-9 win over the Texans. He didn't look that great. Offense didn't look that great. But shout out to Matt Stafford. He has been a great quarterback for a long time, and I think he's underappreciated. I truly believe that. Connor?
Gabe?
Connor? Daniel Jones?
Dimes!
He looked damn good! He looked really good! First quarterback to record 2+ rushing touchdowns, 1+ passing touchdown, and no INTs in his first start with a new team since Daniel Jones did it in 2019 with the Giants. That's kind of funny. So I don't know if there's going to be sustained success, but God, did he look good. I mean, you watched him play on Sunday, and you realized, okay, that's why Anthony Richardson didn't win this job. That's why they've taken a number 4 pick from a couple years ago and put him on the sidelines. It looks like a revitalized version of Daniel Jones. He was using his legs. He was on target, on time with all of his throws. Now, we could also look at the Dolphins side of things and say they might be the worst team in the NFL in week one. They looked horrible. It was a 33-8 win. But Daniel Jones looked great. Now, I want to start a trend here. Instead of calling him Danny Dimes, can we switch the nickname? You've seen the new one, right? Indiana Jones.
He's got to earn that.
Oh, come on.
You got to earn that. Got to earn that. That's sacred. That's sacred.
With a fresh start, though, we need to get a fresh start for his nickname. We have to put Danny Dimes in the past.
If he does this for a few weeks, we can discuss it.
Okay, so I'm going to, every week, if he keeps stacking up wins, I'm going to come in and I'm going to run it by you. Has he met the criteria?
I like that.
And you give me a yes or no.
We can do that.
Bengals win their opener for the first time since 2021. Although, did it really feel like a win? Not really. They won on the scoreboard 17-16 over the Cleveland Browns, but the Browns held the Bengals to 7 yards in the second half. It's the fewest yards in a second half by a winning team in the last 25 years. Also, Cleveland outgained Cincinnati 327-141 and doubled up their first downs 22-11. You know, you won. You won the game, but the one thing I want to see from the Bengals is that offense click on all cylinders. Like, we came into the year thinking this defense is going to stink. Offense is going to have to score 40 points to win every game. It was a complete opposite week one. But it's week one of the NFL season. I expect them to get going. Aaron Rodgers, 22 for 30, 244, 4 touchdowns, 34-32 win over his former team, the Jets. And they asked Aaron, hey, did you enjoy that one? He said, I was very happy to beat everybody that was involved with the New York Jets. So I think he enjoyed it pretty heavily. The Lions got torn apart by the Packers. Almost limb from limb, 27-13. They couldn't get it going offensively, especially rushing the ball. 22 rushes, 46 yards. I thought they were supposed to have the best offensive line and one of the best backfields in the National Football League. Jahmyr Gibbs, great player, rendered nearly useless in this game. Did not run the ball well, had 10 catches for 31 yards. 10 catches, 31 yards. Good for fantasy players, not good for getting a win. And I came across a really jarring stat because I tried to tell everybody. I tried to tell you, tried to tell everybody. Replacing eight coaches, replacing OCDC, that's hard to do. I always pick the Packers to win this division. But here's a stat about Jared Goff that really, really scares me. Jared Goff has had five different play callers and OCs in his career. Under the other three, including the one he has this year, not named Sean McVay and Ben Johnson, what's his record? 0-19-1. He has not won a game he has started without Sean McVay or Ben Johnson calling plays for him. Both head coaches, both promising young head coaches. Well, Sean McVay's been doing it for a while now, but Ben Johnson definitely fits that mold. That's a concerning stat to me, no matter which way you try to spin it. Yeah, I'm still trying to figure out how they won that game, Connor. I still don't get it. They win 41-40. Tip pass off of, I think, Dalton Kincaid's hands that ends up in Keon Coleman's. I went to sleep after a 46-yard run from Derrick Henry to score a touchdown. They were up 40-25, and somehow they came back and won that game. Still don't understand it. Can I be the one to ask this, though? Did you watch the whole game in its entirety live?
Yes.
Was it very much a real comeback, or was it a little flash in the pan, kind of a little cheeky? You know what I mean? Keon Coleman with the tip off the hands into his hands. They don't get the two-point conversion. Granted, they got the stop, but Derrick Henry fumbling the ball
doesn't happen very often. I think Harbaugh started coaching to not lose rather than coaching to win at some point in the game.
They had a two-plus score lead. It's like, why would you? Yeah, that's strange.
He stopped being aggressive.
I woke up, saw the score, went back and watched the highlights, and I'm like, how did that happen? But a great game. Wonderful Sunday night game.
Unreal first week game.
No doubt. But that will do it for a trip around the National Football League. One more segment left in the second hour. Let's go ahead and get to it. That would be Small Talk. Services, reputable service available 7 days a week. Just now seeing this, this could have been an addition to trip around the National Football League, but Cardinals beat the Saints in week one. Arizona Cardinals, New Orleans Saints. Kyler Murray played pretty well. I think 163 yards throwing the ball, two touchdowns, no interceptions. He let people know that he had died.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Diarrhea early Sunday at 4:30 a.m. before the game, and he had to take a bunch of Imodium just to play. Still got the win, though. Still got the win. I would have never known. But apparently he was talking to, of course, one of his gamer friends from the FaZe Clan. That's how people figured out he had diarrhea, which, you know.
You can't snitch on your guy.
Yeah, it's not great. He was on a live stream.
Did he know he was on a live stream?
I think so. After a while, but he says
things.
It was bad. That was the quote he gave. It was bad. Also, Memphis basketball news: Ryder transfer, 6'9", 235-pound big Tariq Ingram is set to visit Memphis this week. He averaged 10.9 points per game, 7 rebounds, 1.5 assists on 54% from the field. He just recently received a waiver to be immediately eligible for the 25-26 season. Per my guy Hitman, who we've had on the show, Hitman Hoops on Twitter, on X. He said he's a solid low-post scoring threat with good footwork and touch around the rim. He uses his physicality really well inside and would provide immediate help at a big spot for Memphis. But my question is, haven't they filled out the entire roster? They've 15 scholarships. They're definitely taken up. So
somebody
should this tell us about Sincere Parker and the outlook on him going into the season or what? Because I don't think you can add him to add another scholarship out of thin air. So just something to pay attention to this week while he is on campus. Let's go ahead and grab a break. Hour number three is on the way. You know what we do every Monday at this time. We talk some college football with Harold Grader, the Associate Executive Director of the AutoZone Liberty Bowl. He's next.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland you know, think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.